Hey everyone, Fig Truth listeners, subscribers, fans, we are getting ready to do an episode here on the gospel. This is Drew and Elijah. Welcome to the Think Truth podcast. Okay, the gospel. It's one of those things that's so basic, like all basic things are. I think you can forget about them sometimes because they're so basic. It's like when you become a Christian, you need to accept the gospel. You need to know the facts about Jesus. And then once you're really in, now you got to learn discipleship and following Jesus, being a Christian and stuff. And we have the tendency sometimes, I think, to get away from the gospel then. And so we want to take this podcast opportunity to talk about how to relate to the gospel in an everyday sort of way and do that in a life-building, Jesus-centered sort of way, the way the apostles would have. Drew, maybe you can give some context here on why we as Anabaptists maybe right now really need to think about this topic.
Right. Yeah, I think as Anabaptists, we tend to want to focus too much on issues that we feel we have a corner on. Mm-hmm. And then things that are more general or things that are more accepted across other denominations, we tend to be less eager to promote.
Yeah.
That might be a little unfair, but I think there's at least a tendency that way. And the gospel is simply not something that is only appreciated by the Anabaptists. And it's a good thing that, yes, it's a very good thing that that's the case. But I think there's, I know there's been times myself in the past where I would have almost had this view of, in a more, say, standard evangelical context, when people are talking about the gospel, it's like, well, yeah. Like, we all know that stuff. We know Jesus died on the cross. We know he resurrected. We know his grace covers our sin. But, like, let's get on to, like, the real deeper stuff of actual practical Christian living that we actually take seriously as Anabaptists,
right,
instead of just going on about like this abstract idea of God's grace and the crucifixion or whatever. Mm-hmm.
And Anabaptists really believe in like a sort of practical Christianity that takes Jesus' word seriously, that, you don't just believe stuff, but you live stuff. And there's like a good connection between words and deeds and,
right.
And the gospel doesn't seem practical, right? Mm-hmm. Which then it kind of gets relegated to the obvious and then sometimes even kind of relegated to the dustbin where it doesn't actually hold it's more like history than it is practically true and helpful in our lives.
Yeah. And I think we tend to think about the gospel and especially if, like in the past, again, if I would have been reading like a more evangelical book, mm-hmm. It was so ingrained in me to kind of run to, if we're talking about, you know, the gospel, the blood of Jesus, you know, forgiveness from sin, so easy to run to with that. Okay. It's like, great. But like, now what? Mm-hmm. Like now what are we doing with this? It's, which I don't think all of that impulse is wrong. Like, I think it's good to recognize that as redeemed believers, we need to live differently. We can't just kind of claim this abstract thing and then go about our lives not living any differently. Mm-hmm. But I think we err on the side of needing to push it towards something happening.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of the beauty of the gospel is precisely that it changes us, and it's this free gift that we receive that isn't only there so that now we can go do something. And yeah, I think sometimes we need to slow down and recognize, look, you know, we are saved by grace. We are not saved by works. We're not even saved by our adherence to certain New Testament commands that we think other people have overlooked, mm-hmm. even if some of those things are important. And
yeah.
I think having the right perspective on that is just a really crucial thing for us in the church.
Yeah, and I think it's so important because the way the Apostle Paul viewed the gospel was that it was practically effective. Mm. By definition, the gospel, which maybe given a simple definition would be something like the story of how Jesus created the Christian community by what he did for us and dying on the cross and destroying death and sin and rising from the dead. Paul saw that gospel message was supposed to practically shape even our understanding of what Christian morality is. Mm. So maybe we should get into that some.
Sure, let's do it.
So I had the privilege of studying Galatians in a class by Paul Amicella. You weren't in that class.
I was not.
Your wife
My
was.
My wife
in
was,
it.
Yeah.
So one of the assignments that I worked on was working through the book of Galatians and creating a sermon on this topic of how Paul viewed ethics and coming, you know, what is Christian morality? How do you determine what's right and what's wrong? And it seems that in the book of Galatians, the way Paul takes this approach is he lays out kind of his reasons for how he thinks as a Christian now. And he starts with like Galatians 2:20, I'm crucified with Christ, but it's no longer I who lives, but Christ who lives in me. And the life that I now live, I live through faith in Jesus as Messiah. He says in the first part of the book, it's as if through this perspective of knowing Jesus, like in Paul's words, who gave himself, what does he say? Loved me and gave himself for me, Paul says. That's where he goes on and says, I don't give any opportunity for the flesh. And Paul saw that any kind of, to the Galatian believers, it was this temptation to go back to the law and see themselves as saved through their kind of regulation keeping. And Paul says, no, that's not how it works. The gospel, which is Jesus loved himself, loved us and gave himself for us, is how, as we love the Jesus who gave himself for us, as we meditate on those things, we then get reshaped so that we love him. And as we love him, we look at morality differently. Mm-hmm. Because rather than doing it out of a sense of self-righteousness, we still do the right things, but we do them because we love the Jesus who gave us access to a new and living hope.
Right.
To use Peter's words, I believe. So, in Galatians, he starts and I think gives a sort of direction to morality. You start with knowing Jesus and loving Jesus and understanding what Jesus did for you. And it's out of that perspective of really knowing the master, the giver, the creator, and the redeemer that then we have this direction into how to do this. We're like, we love Jesus, therefore we want to follow him and do things the way he wants. And so if you forget the story of what Jesus did, if you sort of leave the gospel message back in your past of kind of what you had in the beginning, you're at danger of really continuing to do the same things. Like John the Revelator says to the Ephesian church, you lose your first love. You're still like, you're still super faithful in like rooting out hypocrisy and false and heresies and things like that. But you've lost your first love. And to Paul and the other apostles, the first, like the love for Christ was the whole point, which I think is why when Paul starts like every one of his epistles, he says, I thank God for you that you have faith toward God, love for each other. Because I think it's Philemon where he talks about even more directly, like the love that you have for Jesus impacts the way you love each other and stuff. So it's through this perspective of recognizing what Jesus did that then faith is born from that. Mm-hmm. And I think for Anabaptists, sometimes we can almost end up with like a gospel-less morality. Mm-hmm. Where we know all the right, you know, we know the non-resistance and the separation from the world, and we know we got all of our doctrines, but the power of the gospel, which is the recognition and the exaltation in what Jesus did for us, has kind of some of that mystery, some of that like magic has been lost.
Right.
Do you catch my drift?
I absolutely do. It's almost, I think it was like I was saying earlier, that's almost this rush to take the gospel. I'm like, yeah, this is good. It's good we have this. It's good we have, you know, God's grace working in our lives. But let's like take this now and move towards this end goal of this new kind of morality.
Yeah.
And I think as you were saying, like the point is supposed to be that receiving the gospel, having God by the Holy Spirit working through our lives is actually transforming who we are,
mm-hmm.
our inner being. But I think, and maybe we can talk about this a bit. I think there's a bit of a tension here because for one thing, like the book of Galatians is written to, and this, I think this would be like a classic, maybe Anabaptist rebuttal to some of this. And that would be that the book of Galatians is written about the kind of the Jewish, like Mosaic context, where people are trying to go back to like the religious law. And I think an Anabaptist might say, well, but we're trying to follow the New Testament. We're not trying to follow the outdated Mosaic law. We're trying to follow things in the New Testament that we think need to be practiced. And so I think the tension is there because I think there are some distinctive things that the Anabaptist community is correct about.
Yes.
And should indeed be trying to follow. But I think there needs to be a way to hold those things without feeling like the point of the gospel is to kind of rush us to that point so we can end up at this end goal of holding these certain New Testament commands, which I just think too often it turns into that. You following me?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think this is where this question of the, like the direction of moral, like how do you arrive at your morals? That's why that's so important. I think what's going on in Galatians. Yeah, sure. The background is the Mosaic law. But the broader points that Paul is making is the way you get to understanding how you do what you do or what you do is starting with what Jesus did for us. And so I don't care what you fill in of all the things that Jesus said or whatever. And I think a good case could be made that a good part of what Jesus was doing was expanding and showing how the Mosaic law gets fulfilled and in a sense almost broadened would be like one way to look at it. Sure, like there's certainly some parts of it that are no longer applicable to Gentile believers, it's not non-binding. But I think part of what Jesus was doing was saying like, if you're a part of the new covenant, if God's Spirit has come in you and changed your inner being into like something from something that was stony to something that's receptive and a heart of flesh, like Jeremiah, I think it's in Jeremiah and Ezekiel. If that has happened, then you view marriage differently, right? That's he talks right. about divorce. Mm-hmm. You view lust, adultery differently. You view hatred and murder differently. So that's part of what Jesus is doing is he's raising the bar because there's this understanding of like, there's actually something different going on where like you have within you this, this motivation that people in the Old Testament didn't have, a motivation of understanding what God did and a motivation from starting from, the sacrifice of Christ and then moving to through love to how does this affect my life? I want to take a couple examples here real quick because I talked as well about like the gospel is actually supposed to define, not just give you motivation to do what you should, but actually define what is right. And I think about Ephesians 5 as one of the primary examples where Paul's like, husbands, love your wives. Why? Because, Christ loved the church. So in the same way, you're supposed to love your wife. And in fact, to all the categories of people that he talks about, with children, you know, this is acceptable to the Lord, masters and servants, he says, masters, you have a master in heaven as well. The implication being like, if you want to figure out how to treat your servant, think about how Jesus treats you or the Father treats you. If you want to figure out how to treat your wife, think about what Jesus did to the church. Mm-hmm. If you want to figure out how slaves should respond to their masters, think about the same sort of humility and self-sacrifice that Jesus had. Peter does the same thing in his recommendations to slaves, to wives, to husbands, is he points them back to the gospel, I think is exactly what's going on. And he says, remember the position, the hope that you've been given, and then act from that position of realizing the privilege you're given in Christ. And then move forward to saying, okay, if Jesus did this for me, this is what I'm going to do for others.
Yeah, I think we could fundamentally say that God's people have changed in the new covenant, not simply that the list of requirements of what God's people need to do have changed.
Totally.
It's much more accurate to think of it as that way. Mm-hmm. And I think it's tricky because I think we do have practical advice and practical things we need to follow specifically in the New Testament. But I think the primary point of that is we're going to do these things because we are people with a changed heart. And I think whenever we start to move away from the changed heart, from the fruit of the gospel working in our hearts and just try to make some kind of a new moral code without seeing the fundamental heart change as being the driving factor, then I think that's when we run into problems. And it's certainly, I think the Anabaptist community is going to err in that direction instead mm-hmm. of the kind of the caricature of, you know, evangelicals who just want to receive free grace and like don't care about how they live.
Yeah, and let's talk about that for a moment, because I think it's a fair critique to say mm-hmm. that there are some people who seem to be fired up about the gospel, but it doesn't really seem to be shaping their life. Now, I think it's also true that, you know, say like the typical example of an Anabaptist who goes, I don't know, street evangelizing or something, and talks to somebody who's like, you know, in the middle of smoking or something, and he's like, yeah, I love Jesus. Jesus did a lot of stuff for me, whatever. And you're like, well, okay, but how's this shaping you? Do you go to, you're going to church? Like, are you a Christian actually? Or do you, and they're like, nah, you know, I just follow Jesus, whatever he says I do, but I got a lot I'm still working on and whatever. So how do we, as believers who care about the gospel really, and also believers who care about letting the gospel reshape the way we think and live with each other, how do we make sure that we don't end up with sort of a truncated gospel that is abstract but not practical? I mean, clearly what Anabaptists care about having a practical gospel matters. I think what we're saying is, like, we don't want to get to the practical stuff by ignoring the gospel, but rather we need to talk about, like, how do we start from the gospel and have this really practically shaping the way we live?
Uh-huh. Well, I think too often even in thinking about like a hypothetical or not too hypothetical in a lot of cases, conversation like that, we run too quickly to kind of things that are downstream from the gospel that we can see, okay, well, this person's smoking, you know, obviously, or whatever. And instead of rushing back to the core of the gospel mm-hmm. and using that as...
Totally.
Yeah. Because I think that's fundamentally what we have to be looking at. We have to be looking at, if someone's claiming that Jesus is taking over their life, that they follow Jesus, like, what does that actually mean? Is their life actually changed by him? And sure, some of that means looking at specific questions about, you know, how are you living, you know, are you trying to be part of a church? Are you trying to follow Christian ethics in any way whatsoever? Like, some of those things are fair, but I think too often we're stuck on some of those more outward things.
Really down,
which should change,
one way to think about it is like downstream from,
exactly.
from the gospel.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, they should change. And I think going back to that example, I think this is where you're going with this. We really need to make sure even in situations like that, that our approach in dealing with somebody who the gospel doesn't seem to be affecting them is to preach and teach a better gospel, mm-hmm. not to be like, oh, well, apparently the gospel's not working, so let me give you the practical moral code
to
get fixed.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that might be, I think it's probably somewhat unusual for someone to be quite that nakedly law-based and something like that. But I still think, although maybe. Sure.
Well, but I think what we do, like when we see someone, we're instantly thinking like, okay, your life is messed up. So clearly you're not, following Jesus the way you should or whatever, which may be mm-hmm. true. But the question, the real question is, do you actually have a good understanding that will be life-shaping of the gospel? Mm-hmm. Because I can teach you all things all day long. And I think in some ways this was part of the story, at least for some people within the charity movement who came in, is they got a whole list of stuff that they were like, oh, okay, so this is what it means to be a Christian. Yeah. You know, got to have a certain type of clothes, a certain way of speaking, a certain Bible translation maybe. Mm. I got to go to a certain church. I have to train my kids a certain way, make sure I do spanking, whatever. Like, they had the whole list of stuff. And for some people, certainly not all, but for some people, it became more important to revamp their list of things to do than it was for them to really understand and love what Jesus did for us.
Yeah.
And sure. I think maybe you have like a different way to say this or maybe disagree, but I think it's impossible to really fundamentally love Jesus and understand what he did and not be practically shaped by that.
Oh, I think I agree with that. Yeah. But I think, again, the difficulty is how much... It's tricky because, I mean, the Bible does talk about, like, knowing people by their fruits, and it's not like... So at some level, we do have to...
Some of that at least is talking about teaching.
Right. Yeah. I think we can take verses like that out of context, but they still exist and they still do factor in some way into the conversation, I think. But even to go back to say like that hypothetical conversation again, I think we need to be careful that we don't instantly respond to that by like kind of going over a checklist of certain distinctive doctrine and seeing like, okay, well, do you practice this? Like,
totally.
Well, are you living with a woman you're not married to, or are you living with a divorced woman, or, you know, whatever, like kind of running down those things, which matter. The point isn't that those things don't matter. But I think if we would, it would be better to respond in a way where we actually get kind of more at the core of what the gospel means, how it changes us, how we live less selfishly, how we have a love for Jesus that causes us to want to, you know, spend time with him. And and what would it be like if we actually kind of went down that road with someone like that instead of, yeah, and of course, like in some later point, we're going to have a conversation about that. And in some place, it's valid to say, you know, well, hey, you say you believe in Jesus, you know, what's that you're smoking? It's not like there's never a place for anything like that. But I think we have to be really careful that we aren't signaling by accident that what really matters to us is a certain list of commandments that everyone needs to be following. Because I think it could be missing the core of what we really want to be there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think some of the new Anabaptists, like the Kingdom Movement, are taking something of an N.T. Wright perspective, like new perspective on Paul, that says, you know, Jesus's kingdom was a kingdom where there's rules in the kingdom. You know, Jesus is the king, there's rules in the kingdom. And so to be a Christian, your life really has to line up pretty closely with what Jesus taught and lived. Otherwise, you can't really call yourself a Christian, right? I'm thinking about maybe David Brousseau and John D. Martin and people from more of that kind of movement. So clearly there's good stuff there.
Yeah.
Let's maybe bring hopefully some nuance or perspective on where that might go wrong, or So we want people to really actually be following Jesus. Like that's super important. And there's some sense in which works matter as an indicator of faith, right? And if you arrive on Judgment Day and your works show that you didn't have faith, I think is the way I would put it, where there are clearly some verses where Paul says, like, we're going to be judged by our works or things like that. But I think what's important is, like, what are the works showing, or the lack of works? I think it's showing that you either have faith or you don't have faith that is true. So anyway, why don't you give some perspective or maybe some additions to that conversation that might be helpful of the way that a strong view of the gospel and also the way like this new kind of kingdom, relatively new kingdom movement within the Anabaptists might come together.
So I think a big danger there is the tendency to reduce things into easy categories and also a faulty assumption that things are linear that aren't. And just to unpack that a bit, I think it's, I know we've talked about this before, but it's easy to have this idea of there being certain things that the more serious you are about God and the faith, then you're going to take these certain secondary commands more seriously and on down the line. So I think we really have to watch out for trying to make categorizations that we shouldn't be biblically with people.
Sure.
So even if there's some kind of a principle, a New Testament principle that we think should be applied, again, maybe down this new Anabaptist perspective or whatever, we can't confuse that with thinking that that is at the core of what it means to truly understand the gospel. Because there could be somebody that is living a life that's very saturated by the gospel, that is filled with love for others, that has undergone a radical transformation of their selfish nature, whatever, that gets some of those other things wrong.
Yes.
And it's not like we don't care about that. But I think sometimes it almost seems that in some contexts, people don't care that other people have gotten the gospel right because they haven't gotten these other more secondary doctrines correct. Mm-hmm. So I think that's where the biggest danger lies. Not in, there's nothing wrong with trying to, you know, follow the Bible and take what you might say secondary things to heart more.
But I think it's also assuming that we don't lose like substitutionary atonement and things that really clearly do matter to Paul's gospel,
which
that's somewhat you know, under question,
right? In exactly. Some circles.
But yes, I think go on. But I think you're right on. We need to care about those things, but we need to make sure our categories are right as well.
Right. And I think if we aren't careful, we can, and this absolutely, there's no question about this, and it's not just, I don't think it only happens in an Anabaptist context, but there are certain distinctives that because of certain church politics or whatever, we've been kind of primed to take very seriously, that we're going to really make sure everyone in our church is following when things that actually might be closer to the core aren't being followed, that kind of don't get picked up by our radar. Mm-hmm. So you know, we're worried about the people that are stretching our understanding of outward appearance or dress or something like that. And there are people in our church that are quite greedy and selfish, don't have much time for others, and are workaholics and not very nice to their employees. And it's a little, there isn't like some distinctive command that we instantly apply to that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, if we're thinking, you know, how would Jesus live? How would Jesus, you know, relate to his employees? How would Jesus this or that? It's incredibly obvious that in some cases like that, things would need to change. But if we aren't careful, I think, yeah, our priority and our perspective on those things can change. Yeah.
And so here's, I think, where it's critical that we teach the moral direction of the gospel, of how the gospel, how we get the gospel and how the gospel shapes us to then love the people around us. Because we're never going to make, even if you believe that having rules within a church is the best way, having sort of written rules within a church is the best way to keep your church on track. Even if you believe that, you still can't make a moral code that hits on enough of the heart
right.
issues of selfishness and anger and stuff to create, you know, fully Jesus-following people. And so what tends to happen then is you focus really hard on the stuff that you have mm-hmm. written down.
Right.
And you're under the danger of potentially losing the underlying purpose of the gospel, which is for all those things that you really can't manage at all within a church.
Yeah.
The gospel's supposed to be the thing that motivates you and kind of turns you inside out so that you realize where you're selfish and where you're angry, where maybe even people around you can't know your heart right. motivations. We need to see the gospel as teaching the gospel is profoundly important for the practical reality of living out the truth.
But some of the practical reality can easily be condensed into some kind of a rule or easy guideline. Like a church can't say, like, we do not allow our members to ever feel anger in their hearts. Like that just this doesn't I mean,
you,
work.
You can, but there's no way to enforce it.
Well,
or
of course,
know
it'd
whether,
be silly.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So... But some of those things matter more than the things that actually can be enforced.
Totally.
Which is where I think, again, we're not wanting to have a conversation about the merits or lack thereof of church rules, yeah. but whatever someone thinks about that issue, I think it's quite crucial that it be understood and recognized that there's quite a lot of really deep heart level issues that are very important. And also have the humility to recognize that there are people that get some practical New Testament teaching wrong, right? Mm-hmm. That are living with a more transformed heart in kind of more of a meta way than some people are in our church who are, you know, you could say gotten some points of doctrine, mm-hmm. right, that they haven't.
Yeah, and the thing is, if you live in an environment, if you grew up in an environment where some of those things were taken for granted, like I think of myself... I think it's a really fair thing to ask oneself, especially if you grew up in a Christian home and you had kind of a moral understanding of life already. If I had the same commitment to the same level of commitment to Jesus, but I didn't have all of those, the character that was taught, and I didn't have the structure around me to help form me into a moral person, would I actually look like I'm as on track in right. in terms, I'm not obviously, yeah, but we all got our issues, but I think it's easy for somebody who's a second or third or 10th generation Christian to think, man, I'm actually kind of on track. I mean, I do a lot of things right. According to what the church says, according to what I believe is true, but the gospel cuts beneath that. Because what the gospel says is, hey, even if somebody still is smoking and they haven't gotten over their smoking addiction, they might be more on track in terms of actually loving Jesus and responding to him and having a heart of repentance than the person who's doing every detail right that the church requires or whatever, but really inside they're doing it for the wrong reasons and they're not starting from a love of Jesus and a faith in him
right.
perspective. So I think it's pretty critical.
Yeah, and the gospel is supposed to be transformative and something miraculous. Mm-hmm. And if a church gets together and manages to, however they do it, enforce a certain level of tradition that in order to kind of fit within the social fabric of the church, you have to follow certain things, and somehow everyone manages to do that. And I'm not entirely making fun of that. I think there's some validity for that. But there's something about that that should not be primarily what is driving the spirituality of a congregation, because tradition and being raised in ways that are positive and right and things to continue in are good, but something else needs to be happening in addition to that. Like we don't want to have people at our church not have a social fabric or not have certain traditions that are going to help, you know, young people growing up in our church to know what to follow or whatever. But if we think that's the gospel,
or if
then
we think
we're
we can
trouble.
Downplay the gospel because we have positive traditions like this.
Like, well, yeah, the gospel's great, but, you know, we've really managed to get a good sense of tradition here. I think it's not sustainable in the long run, for one thing, but I think, it just fundamentally misses what the gospel's supposed to be doing, and we can go about looking like we're checking a lot of boxes we should be while not having hearts that are really as transformed as they should be.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's right. I don't know if you have anything else. I was thinking it might be good to close with something that's from Tim Keller on this subject of the gospel. He's one of the guys I think that shaped me the most. Of course, he passed now, but through his writings on what is the gospel and how should it affect us. Great message, by the way. I don't know if you've listened to it. Called gospel-centered Christianity or something like that. It was done at TGC several years back. The gospel-centered life. That's what it's called. But one of the things that he said, he talks about idolatry, and he says idols of the heart are the thing. You know, of course, the Old Testament people, the big struggle was against idolatry, which is alternate salvations in some ways. Like, my crops are failing, something's going wrong, I'm going to turn to an idol that has that specific function that can sort of like take away my life issues. And the story that God was telling the Israelites was, no, I'm all sufficient. I am your salvation. And maybe things aren't going the way they're supposed to right now, but if you follow me and you live righteously, you will in the end grow like a tree beside water, and you will flourish and all this stuff. And so similarly, the Christian story is in Jesus alone is our faith and hope and trust. And so when we have issues in our life, whether they be monetary issues or romantic issues or family issues or whatever they may be, if we turn to alternate salvations, you know, turning to our job or our hobbies or whatever to help govern our happiness, and we miss the fact that in Jesus is our only hope. Even if the external performance that we have is fairly good, we will be off track and we'll be really jeopardizing our salvation. So then the point is we need Jesus's, we need that story of the gospel to constantly be a gut check for us. That, you know, regardless of the exterior of what my life looks like, do I have idols within my heart that I'm turning to alternative salvations to help me work through the life problems that I have that are drawing me away from the gospel? Because if I'm drawn away from the gospel, there is no hope outside of Jesus. And I think that's super critical when it comes back to this idea of what's central in what we share and what we live. The gospel's practical.
Right.
And we need a practical gospel. We need to live it out, but we need to understand it first and love the Jesus who gave us all these things.
Yeah.
So I guess that's it for this week. Take the gospel seriously. We need to preach it and live it in our communities. And I think this is just so crucial that we get the gospel right and that we love Jesus through what he did for us. So we'll leave it at that. See you all next week. You're listening to the Think Truth podcast, and this is Drew and Elijah.